So tonight we are looking at How to Awaken from the Dream, Part 2, page 61. And of course, the first part of How to Awaken from the Dream was about letting go of expectation. So we'll look at the second part. Today, I want to tell you how to awaken from the dream. It isn't a mystery, and anyone can awaken when he is ready. He simply will not awaken until then, but his time dreaming can be spent preparing himself to be ready. This is the purpose of devotion. Devotion is willingly awakening to what has always been true by leaving everything else behind. And, you know, if you think about that, that really is devotion to purpose or devotion to truth if you're willing to leave everything else behind. I mean, isn't that really the definition of devotion? You know, nothing else compares to this. I'm willing to leave everything for this. Another thing that I think is really interesting about this paragraph is it says that we cannot awaken until we are ready. And I think a lot of people, in fact, I know because I've, been around people when we read paragraphs like this, and they'll say, but I am ready. You know, I've been ready for years, and, it doesn't happen. And I think there's a difference between being what I would call thinking that we're ready and being really, truly every fiber of our being, our complete soul, our heart, soul, mind, strength, ready. And I think that we aren't good judges of when we're ready. And so I think that we can assume that when we are ready, we will awaken. And if we aren't awake, then we are still making ourselves ready. And we can just do that, just make ourselves ready. And that's what this says, that our time dreaming can be spent preparing ourselves to be ready. So the next paragraph. Devotion is a slow process. I do not mean to say it will take many, many lifetimes to wake up through devotion. I mean to say that devotion is a slow process now in every moment. It slows time by slowing the mind. And with practice, experience becomes richer. We are talking about wilds. You might liken it to enjoying a full-flavored meal more when each bite is taken slowly and held in the mouth while you enjoy the richness of its flavor. This is how life becomes. When the busyness of the mind is absent and does not interfere. So first of all, what's inherent in this paragraph, even though it's not directly stated, is that when we're lost in mind, we are missing the richness of life. And that as we learn to be present in this moment, instead of lost in mind, that life becomes richer. And in fact, I remember this morning, I don't remember exactly when it was, but I spend time practicing not being lost in mind, and so I had been doing that, and in this moment I was not lost in mind, and I was stapling some papers together, a pretty mundane task, and I reached out for the stapler, and as I picked it up, I just noticed the coolness of the metal. But there was a little wow there. There was a little, I don't know why, because it sounds so mundane. There was an enjoyment in noticing the coolness of the metal. I don't know how else to say that. Just how it felt different than the other things I had been touching. They weren't as cold. And if I had been lost in mind, I realized it then. If I had been lost in mind, I wouldn't have noticed the coolness of the metal of the stapler. And yet I enjoyed noticing that. And so that's what he's really saying. When we're lost in mind, we miss life. And so if we can learn to be present, then we notice a lot more things and we can enjoy life. There's a movie that I can't remember the name of, If we had enough people here in the room, somebody would shout it out. But in the movie, there's this one scene. I don't even remember the rest of the movie. I remember one scene from the movie where this young man who, you know, wants to be a filmmaker tells his girlfriend, he says, "Do you want to see the most beautiful thing I've ever filmed?" And she says, "Yes, of course." And so they sit down and he turns off the lights and he turns on the film. And it's a paper bag, a piece of trash, blowing in the wind, you know, hitting a brick wall and blowing in the wind. You know, most people would not even notice that. But then he goes on to narrate how beautiful that was to him, how the bag was playing and the bag was calling to him and asking him to play or asking him to dance or whatever. And as he describes how he saw this bag, you know, you start saying, wow, that is beautiful. And the funny thing is that movie impressed me so much that ever since then, I get enjoyment out of seeing a piece of trash blowing in the wind. Like, you know, it just changed my perspective completely. And I always love, every piece of trash is very alive to me now. And I'm blowing in the wind, and it's a wow, you know. So what keeps us from enjoying life in that way and noticing the beauty of a piece of trash blowing in the wind is being lost in our thoughts. And in fact, think about it, even a thought, you know, who threw that bag down here? I wish people would stop littering. I mean, you know, that kind of thought, right? Certainly you're not going to be able to enjoy the beauty of a bag blowing in the wind, right? Yeah. So I'm going to actually read that paragraph again. Devotion is a slow process. I do not mean to say it will take many, many lifetimes to wake up through devotion. I mean to say that devotion is a slow process now, in every moment. It slows time by slowing the mind. And with practice, experience becomes richer. You might liken it to enjoying a full-flavored meal more when each bite is taken slowly and held in the mouth while you enjoy the richness of its flavor. This is how life becomes when the busyness of the mind is absent and does not interfere. The mantra will help to slow the mind and pull focus inward, which is devotion. This is because the heart is within, but the mind is without. When one is focused on the heart, one sees all things from within. One enjoys all experiences from a point of certainty that is within. But when one is focused on the mind, one is focused without. Without is a delusion of chaos made by staying without and refusing to live from within. One thing that strikes me as funny is that thoughts appear to be within. You know, they're in the head, they're in the brain. So they appear to be within. And a paper bag blowing in the wind appears to be without, outside, right? But he is referring to being present with the paper bag as being within and being lost in thought as being without. And that's a pretty interesting switch there. And that's because when we're being present with the paper bag, we're in the heart. And when we're lost in thought, we're looking outward, away from the heart, at the inner movie. Michael Singer calls it the inner movie. At the inner movie, we're totally focused on that screen of thoughts and whatever thoughts are saying, and we aren't noticing our own presence. You could say that when you're noticing the paper bag blowing in the wind, you are appreciating the paper bag within your awareness or within your experience. And when you are lost in thought, you aren't within your awareness or within your experience. You've projected yourself out into the mind. So as you see, you do have a choice. When one focuses within through devotion, life quiets. This happens because one is no longer entangled in the mesh of chaos without. And if one is no longer entangled in the mesh of chaos without, one is no longer a part of it. And so he is free from chaos, and the confusing cries of chaos die for him. Now again, because the words chaos without are being used, people might be thinking, you know, the world, you know, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on. You know, our news has been just full of stuff lately. And so people may think the crazy chaos out there. But this is actually just talking about your thoughts. You know, that's what causes you to experience the world in the way that you do. You know, I hear a lot when I watch the news, because I do watch the news every day. And I hear a lot when I watch the news about how afraid people are right now. And I'm not afraid. And I watch the news. I watch the news without any judgment. I watch the news without any fear. When I watch the news, I think what I see are patterns of what's happening in the world. For instance, I see a very consistent pattern between the stories that we see now about the cops shooting the young black men, and a very consistent pattern between ISIS, attacking wherever they can, and a very consistent pattern between Donald Trump, you know, and kind of some of the attacking language that he uses, and a very consistent pattern between other people now attacking Donald Trump. I keep seeing the same pattern. I see the same thing. And what that causes me to do when I see that same thing over and over again in lots of different forms is it causes me to want to be as still as possible, because I know that's what the world needs now is stillness. And so I watch the news in stillness. I watch the news in presence. And I actually feel that that is somehow contributing. I couldn't possibly know how. But and in fact, I think the more people that would learn to watch the news in stillness and presence, the more helpful it would be to the overall situation. One thing about Ramana Maharshi, which many people know, is that he would read the paper every day. And sometimes people say, oh, he was, you know, they have opinions. Oh, he was, you know, very interested in politics or whatever was happening in the world because he read the paper every day. You know, I don't know. He never commented on it, so I suppose I'm also projecting on what I think he was doing. But I think he was just watching the world in stillness because he knows that somebody has to do it, right? He knows how helpful it is just to be the presence of love and watch what's happening. Just watch it in love, in peace. So the chaos is not what's happening out there. The chaos is what's happening in the mind. You know, maybe while the eyes are out there, but, you know, why is much of the world afraid right now? They're looking at the exact same stuff I'm looking at. And they're just as safe as I am, most of them. I mean, they're sitting in living rooms in town, right? They're just as safe as I am. They're not any less safe or any more at risk, right? I mean, they're in the same position I am. And yet they're afraid and I'm not. It's because of the chaos in the thoughts. It's because of everything that they're letting their thoughts tell them based on what they see, rather than choosing to just be still and watch, right? So the chaos without is actually the thoughts. So when one focuses within through devotion, life quiets. This happens because one is no longer entangled in the mesh of chaos without, meaning really the thoughts. And if one is no longer entangled in the mesh of chaos without, one is no longer a part of it. And so he is free from chaos, and the confusing cries of chaos die for him. Now, I am telling you how to wake up from the dream. And this is to choose to live your life from within. When one lives from within, he is no longer a part of the dream. And so it dies for him, and he awakens. So the less involved we can be with our thoughts, the more we are preparing ourselves to awaken. That's the bottom line. The more we can learn to just be with the world, just watch the world, just be present in this moment, the more we are preparing ourselves to awaken. And this is why I said a while ago that I practice all of the time. I practice bringing myself out of the mind and back to presence. And that's a habit for me. That practice is a habit. I haven't got to the point where I stay out of the mind. You know, something attracts me back in. But as soon as I notice I'm in, I come out again. And what happens, at least based on my experience, is I'm going to say that there are certain types of thinking or certain thoughts that have already died for me. The mind as a whole has not died, but certain ways of thinking have died. You know, like parts of it are gone. And the reason I know that's true is, first of all, when they die, you don't actually miss them. So you're not saying, oh, look, that's died. You know, you actually don't notice it. It just goes. When you notice it is when somebody else shows up expressing that same type of thinking, and then you go, oh yeah, I forgot about that. I forgot that I used to think that way. You know, you remember, oh yeah. And so you'll see it reflected sometimes when other people show up. You go, oh yeah, I forgot about that. So my experience is that the mind, in my case, I guess for some people it happens differently, but in my case, different parts of the mind, and by that I mean different patterns of thinking, are disappearing. And so there's fewer and fewer patterns of thinking that I need, that I get caught up in and that I need to pull myself back from. One really interesting pattern of thinking that I still get caught up in, and it's really kind of fun to watch, and it sounds like a good pattern of thinking to some people, but it's still a pattern of thinking. I would call it being responsible. You know, thinking about a task I need to do and how I can do that task well. When I get there, I'm not there yet, right? And so when I catch myself in that being responsible thinking pattern, I pull myself back out of it again, and I remind myself that when I get there, I'll know how to handle it. I don't need to think about it, you know. So it's not, most people wouldn't even call that a negative thinking pattern. It's not like the attack and the unworthiness and the defense. And those types of things I don't do anymore. Those types of things I worked on first, probably because they caused the greatest pain, right? But I still get lost in thinking. And so I still practice the same way that I let go of the more painful patterns of thinking. I'm letting go now of what I just call thinking in general, anything at all that engrosses my attention, anything at all that I can get lost in. Being responsible is a big one. And, you know, I have the perfect setup for that, too, because I do have kind of a busy work life, you know. So there's always stuff to think about. How can I do this well, right? So it's a perfect setup to either get lost in responsible thinking or to learn to let go of responsible thinking. Yeah. In fact, there's a guy named John Sherman who was in prison. And I used to know his whole story. I've kind of forgotten it. I haven't heard it in years. But anyway, he became interested in awakening while he was in prison. And he says that was the perfect life for him. You know, he had no distractions. So he could focus all of his attention on, I don't know if he read teachings, meditated, probably both, but he had no distractions. And he says that was the perfect life for him in order to awaken. And I remember the guy that was interviewing him, and then he looked at the guy who was interviewing him and said, and your life is perfect for you. You know, and that's why my life is perfect for me. My setup that I'm in now is perfect for letting go of this responsible thinking. And whatever your life is, it's perfect for you to let go of whatever patterns of thinking you need to be letting go of right now. And whatever your life is, it's perfect for you to let go of whatever patterns of thinking you need to let go of now. It's also perfect from the ego's point of view, though, to be honest. It's perfect for us to get lost in. You know, so this is where we have to make a choice. How are we going to let it be used? Are we just going to get lost in it? Or are we going to continually wake ourselves up, right, when we notice that we got lost again? All right, so question for the inner teacher. Would you please speak to us about the experience of living from within part of the time while also getting pulled back into the dream, which is what we were just talking about? Answer. Well, this will not work. One cannot get out of a pool of water and then get in again without once again getting wet. If he wants to stay dry and know the warmth of the sun on his dry skin as his only condition, he must choose to stay out of the pool. And then my comment, but this is very hard for us. And the inner teacher, that is only because you are not fully ready not to be wet. So think about that for a moment. We actually still enjoy our own thinking patterns. That's what this is saying. Even if they're painful. A lot of people get lost in painful thinking patterns, but they have enough interest in those painful thinking patterns to get lost in them. You know? And I remember one friend of mine one time telling me that she, I was talking about how it never feels good to hate. And she said, oh no, it feels real good. And you know, I kind of understood that to a point. I mean, I think I've maybe felt that, what she was talking about before, where, you know, I think that's what gossip is all about, isn't it? You feel better than somebody else while you're all sitting around gossiping, right? But we all, that's not real joy. That's not real happiness. That's just an ego boost. You know, that's an ego boost. And you're getting maybe a temporary high off of your ego feeling all puffed up for a moment. But that's not real happiness. And that's what happens when we get drawn into our thinking, is we're getting an ego boost. Yeah, we're getting an ego boost by being drawn into our thinking. It's like an addiction. You could say that we are all mind addicts. And so we have to learn not to go in for that ego boost, that being lost in thought, that whatever we're interested in, whether it's hateful thinking or worry thinking or trying to be responsible thinking, we need to learn to let go of that boost. And we have to want it because we're addicts. And if you're an addict, addicted to something, don't you have to really want to let go of it, to not be addicted anymore in order to break the addiction? You have to really want it. And this is no different. So if we really spend a lot of time lost in mind, that means that we still are more interested in that ego boost than true happiness, than true joy. Question. What do you recommend for us? Inner teacher. I recommend that you question your mind. When you feel it is hard to stay out of the pool, meaning, of course, out of your thinking, when you feel it is hard to stay out of the pool, ask, who is this I that wants to remain wet? You will notice it isn't the I that loves the warmth of the sun. And you will also know that the warmth of the sun is your truest desire. And so the I that seeks the warmth must be your true I. So what happens for me, you know, I do spend, you know, a good amount of time in contemplation or similar types of activities. Like teaching is like a contemplative work, actually. It's more verbal, but it's the same. Or I spend time in meditation. And I know for a fact that when I am deep in contemplation and meditation and in teaching, which is just a verbal contemplation, I feel as close to my true self as I possibly can. I also know that when I get lost in the mind, I don't feel that true self at all. And so when I'm lost in the mind, I remind myself of what it feels like not to be lost. I remind myself that I feel more like who I really am. You know, it feels more genuine, more authentic to be present or to be in contemplation or to be in meditation. And that I feel that I'm not that authenticity. It's not that it feels inauthentic to be in the mind. I wouldn't say that. But it doesn't have that authenticity. It doesn't have that heart. I remind myself what really is more me. It's more me to be present. It's more me to be in contemplation. It's more me to be focused on God. It's not more me to be lost in thought. And that's basically what this is asking us to do, by asking us to question, you know, who is this I that wants to remain wet or remain lost in thought? It's really asking us to start to notice the difference between the false self and the real self. Notice which one is really who you are. And as you start to notice, oh, you know, I'm the one who really loves to contemplate a spiritual poem. I'm not the one who wants to be worried about whatever, right? I can feel the difference. And then spend more time in your real self or in your heart or, you know, however you want to call that, in devotion. And so stay with yourself. Peace Pilgrim called this being in harmony with herself. She was in harmony with herself when she was in contemplation, in presence, etc. And she was out of harmony when she was lost in the mind, right? Questioner. Oh, this is the same teaching I have been taught before. I am remembering the true desire teachings and the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament. So as you guys know, because you went through NTI with me, NTI is always asking, what do I truly want? Remember, the example I always use is like if you're with a friend who's talking a lot, you know, and you're getting annoyed because she just won't shut up, I would ask myself, what do I truly want? Do I want her to shut up? Or do I want to awaken? And as soon as I ask that question, I can feel myself popping into what feels more genuine, right? I want to awaken. I don't really want her to shut up. I want to awaken. And maybe I need her, you know, in order to learn to be just pleasantly happy being, right? Just being while she's talking, you know. So the true desire teaching from NTI was the same as this teaching that we've just received about learning the difference between the genuine you and the false you, and start to abandon the false you because it's not you. That's why you're abandoning it. It's not who you are. And the inner teacher says, there are no other teachings. In other words, all teachings basically teach the same thing. But there is the realization that all teachings are the same and only one teaching is true. And when he said only one teaching is true, I said it's up to me, meaning I need to make this choice where I want to spend my time and attention, in the false self or the true self. And the inner teacher, however, said, and it is up to God. Both teachings are one. And I said, thank you. When he said, and it is up to God, both teachings are one, it shifted, because when I said it is up to me, I was actually still thinking of the false self, like the person has to do this, right? And so he reminded me again to come back to my truer self. It's the God in me that does this, not the personality in me. Again, you got to abandon that idea that you are that false self. So you can't think the false self is doing the work. Right? It's the God in you that's reminding you to... It's the God in you that causes you to notice you're lost in the mind, not the ego. Right? It's the God in you that allows you to answer that question, what do I truly want? And drop into the heart. It's not the ego. So it's really the God in you that's kind of calling you home, pulling you in. Somebody showed me a video, a friend of mine named Dances showed me a video. Actually, it was photographs, not a video. But it was of a donkey who got lost in the middle of a flood. And somebody noticed and called for help. And the donkey's splashing around, you know, it's really scared. And I think they threw a rope around it and they started to draw it in. And as soon as they started to draw it in, the donkey relaxed. They said he knew he was being rescued. And so he stopped fighting and let us draw him in. When I read that, I thought, that's how we need to be with God, right? We need to be as smart as that donkey. And donkeys don't have a reputation for being very smart. But we need to let God draw us in, you know, just stop resisting, relax. You know, so when God points out to us, when awareness points out to us that we're lost in mind, you know, willingly come back to the mantra, willingly come back to presence. Let us be drawn back into the heart. Don't kick and scream and fight, right? Yeah. Be as smart as the donkey.
Yeah, I've had ER patients that I've had say to them, you're making it really hard for me to help you. And it's helpful to me to remember that because there's sometimes when the universe is, you know, sometimes the universe is conspiring to help you, you know. And oftentimes, I resist the help, you know, and I have to constantly say to myself, relax and let go, and let the help that's available right here, right now, you know, pull you out, or you know, correct the situation, whatever needs to happen. But it's more like, you know, relax. Why would you fight against assistance?
Absolutely.
But people do, even in the ERs and extremes.
And you know why we fight against assistance? Because we want to be independent. Which is like saying we want to be separate. Yeah. You know, I had this glimpse once when I was reading the Tao Te Ching. I had this glimpse of a world where everything flowed perfectly, you know, because everybody was in harmony. But what was interesting in my glimpse of this was it wasn't like everybody had everything. For example, maybe I'm a farmer and I look down one day and notice, oh, there's a hole in my shoe. Just about that time, somebody comes over to visit with a pair of shoes, you know, somebody else who has shoes. And, you know, and what I saw in the vision was together we had everything. And when we were in perfect harmony, we were always prompted into when to give. But of course, we also have to be willing to receive, right? I mean, but everything worked perfect. Everything worked like clockwork. As soon as a need was noticed, somebody showed up to fill the need. And there was never any gaps in our ability to supply one another and receive from one another. That's such a beautiful idea. And if you think about it, that's already trying to happen. And we're blocking it with our wanting to be independent. Separate. You know, relax and let the world assist, like you said. All right, so I think that our assignment was here on page 63, where when I asked the inner teacher, what do you recommend for us? And the inner teacher says, I recommend that you question your mind. When you feel it is hard to stay out of your thoughts, who is the I that wants to remain lost in thought? You will notice it isn't the I that loves to be present. And you will also know that being present is your truest desire. And so the I that wants to be present, the I that is present, is your true I. So what we want to do this week is we want to practice when we get lost in thought. We want to practice, you know, maybe asking, what is it that wants to get lost in thought? Or, you know, anything like that that helps you to notice the difference between the false self is getting lost in thought. And the true self wants to be present, wants to be in devotion, wants to be in contemplation. Start noticing the difference between what is genuinely you and what you thought was you, but it isn't. And you can feel the difference. It's not genuinely you. It's just not. Okay? Plus, of course, continue the mantra and surrender. And then next week we'll learn more about self-inquiry. And next week is our last week this year, because after that she'll be going away on her trip, and we will take a break until after the holidays.